Okay, roll call, take two.
Start the day.
Good evening. We're here for the meeting of the Historic Preservation Commission. It's March 6th, and we'll start with roll call.
Sean Denniston.
Sarah Fox.
Andy Gregg.
Alex Gall.
All right. Good. There's four of us here.
Yep.
Next up, let's take a look at the minutes. I had a chance to review them already. I did. I didn't see anything that needed to be changed. But anybody else need a few minutes?
I move that the meeting minutes from Wednesday, February 6th, 2019, be approved as written.
Do we have a second?
I second that.
All right. Do we have any more discussion? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
All, any opposed? None. All right, so moving on, we have Demolition Subcommittee. Oh. All right.
Pretty much presenting to Andy.
Good evening.
Well, Alex, would you like to go ahead and get the update?
Well, it looks like we're on for that Cultural Resources Protection Summit in May. There really hasn't been too much movement this month. I did look into, after Holly Chamberlain talked about that property on 21st and Franklin that's now demolished. That house was twice evaluated and determined as a contributing element to the Howe Neighborhood Historic District. So it does provide a really good example of how we don't have a process in the county or the city or, you know, for catching things. And, you know, my impetus behind this whole thing was for things that aren't necessarily on a register or determined eligible for anything. But this just kind of highlights that even ones that are, we just don't have a process in place for catching these. So all the more reason to keep on going down this, keep working on this so that we can try to come to some sort of resolution or have a process or something. So
one of the updates from last meeting is we actually have a contract approved, right? Is that?
Yesterday we received a grant agreement from DAP for 999.
To hire a consultant to actually move forward with doing, kind of putting all this report together and providing a recommendation back to us. And so the Demolition Subcommittee has looked at the scope of work and made some changes and whatnot that went out to the consultant. So that we have moved forward.
Yeah.
And then the question, I actually printed off the paperwork from the summit because I saw that she said that unless you're speaking that day and then leaving, you'd have to pay for registration.
Yeah, and it's a pricey one. So I was hoping that we were going to get free registration, but
So that, given the fact that we have kind of that budget discussion too, would be it's for 2 days. It's $245 for 1 day. It's $150. You know, it's a 5-hour drive pretty much up there and back, so you're not going to just go up for the day and come back.
Wow.
So so it'd be probably a hotel stay, no matter what.
What is this?
This is for the 12th Annual Cultural Resource Protection Summit. I brought I printed it off so you could take a look at it, but I think my work would probably let me go. I just know they probably wouldn't pay for any of it. You know, so it looks like we could probably, if we just do the 1 day, the day we're speaking, we won't have to pay. So that's what she said. If you're speaking that day, you don't have to pay that day's registration. But if you wanted to go for 2 days, which I don't know why I would need to be there 2 days, but you'd still have at least the hotel stay accommodations.
So you guys are on a panel, or you're doing a session?
Yeah, we're doing a session on this. And
well, it could be.
It could be all three.
All three could be, you know, I haven't even checked with my work yet, but the idea was that at least two of us would be up there, right, with you.
Yeah, and there's a, there are, I think, two or three other folks who are, have chimed in as being interested in this topic, including the WASHDOT archaeologist. You know, it sounds to me, and I just texted, or I emailed the organizer, you know, what kind of deliverable is she expecting? You know, is this more of a roundtable discussion kind of thing? And I think that's kind of how it's looking. You know, we'd basically be like almost like a panel, mm-hmm. To discuss what we're, you know, the problem, mm-hmm. how we're trying to address it and resolve it, and you know, what options are there, and kind of, I don't know, live brainstorming or something. I you know, I think we kind of need to figure it out. I mean, it is May, so we have some time.
Okay.
And I want to bring in some of those other people.
When's the deadline for you all to register?
I think it just opened.
They just sent the email today.
Yeah,
the registration information.
I think early bird registrations through, I don't know, April or something, and then.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
So I don't know if we can.
We might be able to do that.
We have a budget discussion later.
Yeah, that's why I brought it. I said we have some idea of options on what we can pay for. So I think that's everything from that we have to report back on the demolition. So we'll just be waiting for the.
And what's our timeline with the contract and the grant?
So probably April 1st till August, end of August.
Okay.
Work should be done by August. There'll be a draft presentation to the commission and a final report.
Okay. Did you say it was
$4,999?
Yes.
$4,999.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And who would be hired?
AECOM.
The consultant that did the Core Farm Preservation Plan.
Okay.
All right. How about we move on to the Rules and Procedures Subcommittee update?
Sharon, can I ask one question? Are we allowed to interact with the AECOM folks?
I think so. Maybe one of you do the spokesperson for your community.
Okay. How would you like to do that?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. If there's, you know, some, you know, maybe we could get a contact name or something like that, email.
Sure.
So that, you know, there's a paper trail of communication or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I just, you know, I know with something like this, you know, if you don't check in, and something, they start going down a weird path and come back, and then it's like,
do you want to pick one of you to have that? Because they'll have very limited time, because they kind of wouldn't want every entire commission.
Sure.
Pick one person, and then that person is
I think Alex should still lead it.
Okay.
If you still have the bandwidth to do that, Alex, but you've been leading this pretty much the whole time.
Okay.
Would it make sense for just you? We'd ask her to add you to any correspondence she has with us?
That would be
so
nice.
That you're kind of just on that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so add Alex, that's fine.
Okay.
And then if anything comes up, you can always convene the subcommittee.
Yes.
Exactly.
If we need to talk about anything, and then you can carry that back.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Okay. We will support you. All right, so rules and procedures.
Can I start this one?
Oh, sure. Okay.
Be brave.
Well, okay, so overall, we're doing an overhaul of the entire booklet, right? That is not only our bylaws, which are kind of in here, and away. They call them bylaws. And then every process that we have, so the heritage register nomination process, if you're going for the National Register, what's our role in that? The two tax incentive programs. So that's the current status of this booklet. So as we've all, staff has been, you know, using it as a tool, And as things kind of have changed, we've updated our code. It's time to take a look at it and make it work better for everybody. So that's kind of the lens that we're using to update it. So you guys convened a subcommittee last month to review it. And I finally got a chance to take a look at kind of where we were. And I was like, that's a lot to go put on the commission to review at one meeting. So I was, you know, first I was like, let's chuck this out and do it in pieces. There's no rush. And let's take our time, make sure it works for everybody. So the first, I figured we would start with the bylaws. And Andy and Sean did a great job. They went through the whole entire 60 pages of this. 56 pages. And made comments and hit some like kind of highlights of discussion points that was definitely will need to come up. And I went ahead and just looked at the bylaws specifically. And knowing now some other commissions that I've worked with and creating new bylaws for them and then looking at what we had, I was like, these are kind of incomplete. And so I was like, okay, let's, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it. So I went and found on DAP's website, they have a model bylaw, you know, for CLGs to use. So I used that as well as looking at what we currently had and kind of tried to round it all out. Because when I was reading it, and it's always been kind of a weird part of section of this document, it's not very... It's got its headers that don't match what's underneath it. Like, it'll start to talk about vacancies in one area and then might talk about it again in another area. And staff's in there under commission stuff. So I just tried to clean it up. So I'm going to go, like, you guys can review it and make comments. I just want to kind of hit on some highlights of what the committee members had brought up in regard to their review to kind of get some feedback from you all on what you think we should, which way we should go. The first page is this introduction section that's been in here, and it talks about that we have to send our review or changes to DAP. And we were always like, why do they care? So I asked, I emailed our contact, and she was like, only if you're like changing something that's CLG required would be the only reason we would want to be involved. And she's like, I know you guys aren't going to do that. So it's not a requirement for us to have them review our bylaws. So I think we can maybe put that language in here that's like only if we were to make some change to the what we were required by the state to do as our CLG responsibilities, which I don't know why we would. But so that's kind of that one piece there. Page two, I just kind of made it a little bit more formal, as bylaws usually look for an organization, and then tried to correspond what we updated with code or what's in our code to reflect, you know, what the composition of the membership is, the size. We added this new section, number two, under C, for the appointment process, which reflects our recent process of a subcommittee that reviews the applications and does the interview process. So a question came up was whether or not that should be, it does happen, right? It shall or it should, or is it, you know, we do it now, but will a future commission want to do that as well? And so the type of language, you know, may or shall. So I put in there may, as to not tie a future commission on what they may or may not want to do, but still provides that as, this is a process you could do, it works. So that was kind of the first question. Anyone got any thoughts on that?
Well, I like the may over the shall in that section, but I also saw that you repeated two things there.
Okay.
I crossed out the second time it's said, but it's the when you say the city council may conduct a review and interview process and then forward a recommendation to the county council. The next sentence, it says it again at the end, and the Vancouver City Council may conduct a separate review and interview process, period.
It's saying that the county council receives both the recommendation from the committee and the Vancouver City Council, and then the county council may conduct their own interview process. I think it's worded weird.
Yes. Oh, it's the three. Okay. The committee may do it.
The county council is taking the committee's county council will receive the committee recommendation as well as the Vancouver City Council recommendation. That's what that sentence is trying to say.
Me, it read that the Vancouver City Council may again conduct.
We'll fix that. It's saying like the county council may conduct their own interview process.
And really, my my general feeling on this, which I've probably already said it before every single year, that's really a ridiculously long process. Yeah. And really, at the end of the day, this is a county, you know, commission. So,
well, it's because the City of Vancouver is unique because they are their own certified local government. So the county is a certified local government, and the City of Vancouver is. But the other cities are only under the umbrella of the county's CLG status. So technically, the city could have their own historic program and their own historic commission. So because we're joining forces and collaborating, we share the commission, and they have a little bit more authority, or they have more authority than any of the other cities in how the program works and the commission.
I mean, the other joint committee who just had their meeting 2 hours ago, the county appoints part of it and the city appoints part of it so that you don't end up with this long interview process. So that would be another way to deal with this, is that, you know, if it's a minimum of five, the city appoints two seats and the county appoints three, and then
maybe that is,
you don't have to make the poor applicant get interviewed three times.
Who actually does the appointment is set in the
interlocal
Which
we're in the process of revising the interlocal agreement right now.
So
if we wanted to change that, now would be the time.
How does this group do it? So is it...
This group's eight. So four are appointed by the county and four are appointed by the city.
Is it like a state... It's a call out for applications?
Yeah.
And then...
And then they... the county follows their own interview application process and the city follows ours. They're somewhat different, but...
They're separate tracks.
But
how do you... What if they both pick the same...
But if you have two seats that are city seats, they're not necessarily vacant at the same time the county seats are.
And are they city residents versus...
Yes, in that case, in order to be in the county seats, you have to be just inside the county, and in order to sit in the city seats, you have to be inside the city.
That would be limiting, I think, for us.
So that would be the...
But you don't have to do it that way.
What I imagine would be that you would just have... you know, you'd still have the commission, you know, do our interviews and put forward a recommendation and for whoever's on our board. And if the two seats, like you said, or three seats or one seat or whatever are final approval by the City of Vancouver, then that's where that recommendation goes and that's where the final decision goes. And if the other, you know, seat goes to the county, so then there's maybe, but I just think it seems... way, you know, more than a person shouldn't have to have three interviews for. If we're going to start paying people to be here, I don't know.
The last round where each group interviewed a different set of people, so it was like, well, why did the city council even bother to do this? The county didn't follow any of our recommendations. Mm-hmm. So it would. I think it makes more sense to have two city seats and three county seats.
So that's a larger conversation.
Okay. Just saying.
But, it's definitely something we can talk about because, it is kind of a funky, long process.
Yeah.
And it makes the applicant have to do a lot of steps just to, apply.
Plus, it makes the city council feel like, why are they even bothering if they're making recommendations to the county council that are completely ignored?
Mm-hmm. Well, getting back to the may versus shall, I like the may language, but does it leave it open to possible abuse or anything like that in the future? It's like, well, it just says may. You can be appointed.
It leaves it up for the committee to say, we don't really like this process. Yeah. We want to do something else.
Well, because I think, before we didn't even have, I think when I first started, the commission did not have any say in it.
They weren't part of the process.
For
us.
So
we don't. Our commissions have no say.
That was something new.
I was not interviewed by anyone.
No.
No.
You sure? Really?
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
I was not interviewed by anyone, and I actually had to email the county to find out what the status was, and that's when I said, "Oh, yeah, you were appointed."
Okay, that's weird.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure we interviewed you.
Okay. Anyway.
So I think, how about we just keep the how it is right now, because this is not going to be approved until we're done with everything, right? So we've got some time.
And the interlocal summary agreement is reflecting
yes.
this, we're signing it.
Right, so I don't know if we need to coordinate offline, because this is a council, I would say council decision on how they would want, mm-hmm. if they would want to change this.
Right, well, the only thing that would change, like you said, I mean, you could bring this forward after and change it in another meeting. It's not mm-hmm. like this.
Yeah, right. This is not concrete.
But I don't want to sign the interlocal and then have
right.
to go back and redo it.
Right.
Right. So right now we're in the process of all the cities reviewing this intergovernmental agreement.
For the second time, yeah.
So
I saw that today.
Yes.
One thing I would say about this section, I do like that it's may on a lot of it, but I think that there should be a shall for the commission shall make a recommendation. I don't think it matters how we do it, but since you know, we're talking about two political bodies and the commission has an understanding of what is required of actually doing this business and the kinds of backgrounds that are useful, I think a recommendation from the commission would be a good piece to have in here. And it could just be a sentence in front of it. Point in process, you know, the commission shall make a recommendation, however it's worded, and then everything else stays the same with the maze.
How do you all, the rest of you, feel with that? Okay?
I like that placement of the shall.
Okay, cool. All right.
So do you want to, the county council shall make final determination, or just leave it makes?
I think we need to have a discussion.
Yeah.
We're still, okay.
Yeah. I mean, right now that's how it is, that they make the final decision. Council. County council.
It comes down to it. Our bylaws can really only affect how we behave
right.
in this process.
Right. Yeah, that's true. So number three is pulled in from code, and then vacancies is pretty the same language. There was a question as to whether or not the sentence that starts with members may be removed by the county councilors for inefficiency, if that should be some stronger language, that if you do these things, then you are removed. My comment would be, we can't tell the county council what to do. So that's why I think we have to keep it kind of, they may, because they may decide something differently, and that's their prerogative. So that was a kind of a comment for that. So other than that, those were the same vacancy criteria we had before. We've got the officers, so I just try to clean that up. So it was clear, this is what has to do with officers before it was kind of meshed into something else. I think there was a question by the committee about the time of year, June, is when terms may end, right? June 30th. And then we don't do elections until August, and it could happen where we have two officers that come off, and then you've got July where you have no officers, and should we change things? Well, we can't change the term, because that's just already set and been going. We've moved it to August because the July meeting was always on the 4th of July week, and we couldn't meet at the O. Howard House. And I think it's still okay to keep it in August, because we have another part of the bylaws that talk about if the both officers aren't at a meeting, mm-hmm. then the commission members that are present can select who will have those duties for that meeting. So I think it covers that already. So
well, in this case, this year, when my term ends, you know, we still have a vice chair that
right.
terms continue,
yes.
so we should be fine.
Yeah. So that was. I just wanted to address that question. The next. Okay.
The amendment that bullet point 5.
Right. That talks about that. The next one is quorum. There was a question about quorum. So I know last month you all had. You didn't have a quorum, and it was.
July.
Oh, July.
Okay.
July. There was an issue with quorum. So what happens if you all get here at a meeting, or we know we're not going to have a quorum, do we still meet, or do we cancel? So just talking with Sharon, and we want to bring this up, see what you all think. It seems to make sense that if we know ahead of time, at least the day of, that we're not going to have a quorum, then we should cancel it. Mm-hmm. If we get to the meeting and we have some no-shows that we weren't aware of, and depending on what's on the agenda, you all can decide whether or not just to cancel it or if you want to have a short meeting on something that you just want to discuss. But that was kind of the question as to whether or not, if you don't have a quorum, definitely no meeting, or whether or not you decide to have the meeting even though you don't have a quorum.
I like the way that you, the language choice on this one, actually, to say that it'll be recessed to the earliest possible date. I mean, that's very consistent with, you know, Open Public Meetings Act, that you're here for a meeting and you can then select another date. Especially, I don't remember what meeting exactly that was, if that was July, but it was, I remember we had business that we really did want to conduct that day, so it was kind of frustrating.
You didn't have any votes, but you were talking about stuff, so you did continue.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, even without a quorum, if we don't have any votes, I think it's worthwhile if you, like you say, you have something to discuss, because it's there in the minutes for the rest of the commission to see and comment on, as long as no votes are taken.
So are you saying even to do it if you come to the meeting?
I think if you come to a meeting and you don't have a quorum, but there's something to discuss, have a meeting, you know.
Or decide.
Yeah, and that's not what this says. This says that
right. Yeah. So
that's the question. Whether
yeah, I mean,
add
I'm thinking
something.
That it could be up to the remaining commission members whether they want to go ahead and have a meeting without a quorum if there's just something to discuss or.
And there's also a question of whether you want to discuss something if you don't have a quorum. You know, if you're that much of the commission is missing. Is that really a fruitful discussion?
Yeah, so I'm in the camp of let's just reset the schedule.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And having this in the bylaws means that, you know, when you don't have a quorum, there's no quorum to vote to reschedule, so having it in the bylaws means it makes it happen.
Okay. All right. So we'll keep as is. All right. I think everything on the following page is the same. There was a question we wanted to bring up because we're a unique commission where we have professionals that do work in historic preservation in our communities. On number 12, there was a comment that brought up, you know, is this going to hamstring some of our professional members on just doing their, you know, normal everyday work? Membership discussing or expressing opinions on matters on the commission's agenda outside of commission meetings or with commission members, except as authorized in D6, which is being on a committee. Above or on direction from the chair.
This is authorized in 7 above.
D6.
I must have a weird one.
Did you bring yours?
Mm-mm.
No, you grabbed it from over there?
Yeah.
Oh. There was a mistake. It had the wrong number on one of them.
Okay.
So that's probably why I caught it.
Fine.
So let's have a discussion about that.
I think the other issue here is that for issues that the commission doesn't actually have a regulatory role, then that also means that no members can really have any kind of advocacy role either. So neither a professional role or an advocacy role. And I think just having a clear... Now, if it's anything that we have regulatory, I think you either have to recuse yourself and then you have to be quiet about it. But, you know, there are several things that we do that are non-regulatory that I think that's a question as well.
And what is the definition of matters on the commission's agenda? I mean, is it only for that month or anything that's been on the agenda over the last...
I would think it would be anything.
Is there a statute of limitations? Because at some point you're not going to be able to discuss anything.
I think with, you know... conflicts of interest and I think it would have to be something that you're going to be voting on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was thinking about last year when there was an interview with the Columbian and they asked me about the an item on the upcoming agenda on the Providence Academy, and I told them that I couldn't actually talk about that item that it was going to be on the agenda. I mean, to me, that seems like a really clear example of it wouldn't have been appropriate for me to give an opinion about the case, you know.
Well, even okay, well, what about, like, the demolition subcommittee update on this month's agenda? Are we not supposed to talk about demolition outside? Am I misconstruing this?
But I think it means, I would think it was, it's not, that's a subcommittee.
Yeah, your committee said
so you've been tasked on the subcommittee. I think the difference is the, like, when the items are coming to us for review as a commission on the, you know, the certificate of appropriateness.
So maybe we should make that language a little more specific.
Maybe, but yeah.
Okay.
It's very vague.
In your regulatory.
Yeah.
Because you kind of have an education and outreach function, but you also have a regulatory function where you're actually passing judgment on something.
You're taking an action.
Yeah, and I think that that's where, you know, anything where.
I mean, Sarah just gave the perfect example.
Mm-hmm. Well, but on that, you know, we have an advisory role. We had a non-regulatory role.
But we're still providing our commission's recommendation.
Yeah. But I think also the time frame, you know, can we talk about it?
Now.
Yeah, now.
I think this is kind of getting into a legal territory, so it might be something we put by Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you just more clearly define matters on the commission's agenda to, you know, either regulatory or...
advisory.
Things coming up for a vote or...
Yeah, it could be that way, that, you know, anything that we vote on, because, and that'll get to one of my other comments that maybe we don't talk about right now, but...
Is it in the bylaws?
Well, it's about the bylaws, but it's not this section of the bylaws.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, not this section of the rules and procedures.
Okay.
Or maybe you, you know, I was just thinking about the Providence Academy example. Maybe you just shouldn't talk about it until you're off the commission. Because it's
always
there
better
might be,
to be more,
you know,
conservative with that.
Well, because we just had another item come before us again, you know, on the...
Right.
So
ongoing.
Just keep, you know, some of these structures and things are always going to be something the commission sees or might be on a regular basis.
Let's have a conversation with Chris Cook and see what her thoughts are on this. And we'll get back to you all.
And the additional wrinkle on that is, you know, we had the situation with the Evergreen Inn where, you know, I went to give them advice because, you know, we couldn't take any actual action on it. You know, so if, you know, we also don't want to limit the ability of commissioners to, you know, help.
Right. Yeah, that too.
Okay.
Yeah, and I mean, again, you know, the phrase discussing or expressing opinions is also pretty vague. I mean, that could be pretty narrowly interpreted or broadly interpreted. I mean, publicly discussing, or I don't know. I mean, what is the intention of this?
I think it's just ex parte and making sure that doesn't happen. So maybe, I mean, we'll talk to Chris and maybe there's some better language in the OPMA that says it has it's
more clear. Another example to think about would be, you know, when the bus shelters were happening in the downtown core and a few of our members showed up at a TriMet meeting. I wasn't at the meeting. I just remember hearing about it later at one of our meetings. But they had shown up and testified, you know, as a commission member at this. So that wasn't something that we'd all discussed, you know, prior to that testimony. So I think that would play right to that.
Also, that goes to the one above it, 11. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we hadn't sanctioned that testimony.
Right.
We later wrote a letter that we did, you know, capture what we thought about the proposal, but it wasn't. So just to kind of throw another example out there of, like, why this is important to have clarity, because we don't want members going out there testifying on projects that as a commission we haven't actually made a decision about.
Okay, we'll get some more info on that and get back to you.
Does it change at all? I mean, it looks pretty similar to what's in there right now.
Yeah, that one's still, it came up during the review by the committee as a question. Okay, so the next kind of new stuff is that electronic communication stuff, because that wasn't really a thing when the first bylaws were in place. So it's just, you know, talks about the OPMA, public records, you know, we got to be careful when we're corresponding. We as staff will email you all. Here's this information we want you to review. If you have questions and you have a response, you can reply to us individually, but not to the entire commission. So Sharon and I are going to try, and I've tried my hardest, I always forget sometimes, to BCC you all, so that even if you won't have that option to reply all. So that just will limit the, you know, the concern of having that by accidentally happening, which is easy to do. So it kind of talks about that. I don't think the committee had any issues with that. It's just something that's new. Meeting stuff, you know, we changed the date of first Wednesday. I think all of this is pretty much the same. I pulled in some language from the code that talks about how we notice special meetings and the 24-hour rule, just so that was consistent with the code. Regular order of meetings, pretty much how we've been doing it, and I think that's what's in there currently.
Okay, stop on number five.
Number five of the...
Just right about that seven that you were just talking about. Just, I was thinking, it's kind of along my lines, if there's no action items, it seems to me that we should be holding the meeting. And in this sentence, it seems that there's two different decision makers. You know, one would say the chairperson could cancel the meeting if there aren't any. I would like to add in the word either actionable, what I pick.
Instead of no agenda items, because you could always have, like,
right,
approval of minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, but I'm like, action items or, so we're going to pick something like that.
Okay.
Substantive or action items on the agenda. I mean, it seems pretty ridiculous to show up to approve a minute, you know. You know, either have the chairperson give them the job of canceling the meeting or the vote. But it seems you have two in here, so... The second one would be, if you left it all in there, the chairperson could say, I don't think we should have a meeting, and then
the committee could
overrule them. So it's like, well, give it to one person or the other. Either
right,
have it be the chairperson or have it be an action that we all vote on.
Which could be hard when you're not supposed to do that.
Mm-hmm. No, at a meeting, you know, if you know in advance, like...
Right, I guess
you know in advance.
It's kind of hard, though, to know, yeah, because we could have cases that came into our email box tonight.
Or have the staff decide, you know,
I think usually, I think the authority is appropriate for the chair to, you know, work with staff and determine whether or not a meeting is needed if there's nothing specific on the agenda.
I mean, you know, in the middle of July, I mean, like I said, weren't usually holding meetings in July, and you guys were usually planning substantive things not in July.
Right.
And that would make sense to say, have a chair just agree with you.
Yeah.
Just regulate the sentence, sorry, but however.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That work for me?
And, yeah. Okay. And maybe, yeah, that works. That works.
Okay. And then my other thing, which probably will take more thought, is on number seven. But maybe to break that out into two things. One of them is 30 days, you know, minimum for things like this special evaluation review or certificate of appropriateness. But what if it's, you know, some of these other minor reviews? I'm just wondering if we could shorten that period, give them... the 30 days, so they're not waiting two months for some of these minor design reviews that we've done.
Or, you know, that could be that for these things, if they have been submitted 30 days before, then they shall have a hearing, and then staff may put other ones on in a shorter period of time if they're ready. So.
Yeah, the issue with the 30 days has to do if it's a hearing, and that just gives us noticing timeline. Right? Yeah. It does beg the question with the Heritage Overlay Review, which isn't really talked about at all in these.
Exactly.
I don't think that has the same timeline.
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure if that was what you were putting in there as a, it must be at least 30 days, and I'm thinking we're not.
No, I think because it talks about all those three, the review, mm-hmm. the nomination, special valuation, certificate and certificate appropriateness, yeah. mm-hmm. which needs the 30 days at least.
Okay.
But we will have this another conversation is like, how do we incorporate heritage overlay? Because we need that needs to be reflected in our rules and procedures, which it hasn't.
I just want it to be, you know, again, kind of going back to the role of this commission being approachable and friendly and mm-hmm. whatnot. And if you start putting minimum time frames and, you know, 30 days on this or 60 days on this, and then people don't want to come to us yeah. anymore, you know, so. Even though it's a lot to ask of staff, but you know, just be able to turn things around a little sooner for things that we could give that we're just giving recommendations on. I just want to make sure that we don't lose
yeah.
that.
Yeah, I think with those kinds of items, like with the Evergreen or before when she wanted to come in and just talk to you, or we have property owners that are like, I think I want to do this, but I don't know if I'm ready. We easily just put them on the agenda. Yeah, I mean. We can do it like a week before, you know, right before we send the agenda, we'll put them on. So, okay.
So right now, I mean, this does limit it to the things that we hold a hearing
yes.
for.
Yes.
So I wonder if it would be useful to have a term for that. Now, thinking back to the other, you know, what can be talked about outside the commission and what can't. Mm-hmm. If we had a term for, you know, those things that we vote on that we have authority over to actually make a decision. That can be changed over time as our role might change over time. That might be a useful thing to have to define somewhere in here.
Sure.
And then we can just refer to that. Yeah, so if there are no actionable, you know, official,
I know, there's got to be a better word than that, but yeah, actionable items was the only thing I was coming up with.
But, because it would apply to this about when, you know, when we might postpone a meeting, it would apply to. You know, when outside conversations could be had.
Okay. We'll have staff kind of talk about that, see if we can come up with something that would be helpful. Anything else on that section? Okay. Regular order of meetings was the same.
Got H2 quorum and E quorum is the same.
Yeah,
I just noticed that too.
They're worded different
they're
ways.
They should be the same.
Probably well, and have it one place.
Yeah, only have it one place.
Yeah. So let's see.
Is it under regular order of meetings?
It's used in a couple of places,
yeah.
So I think the first one is the one that
okay.
should be there.
Have it by itself.
So the one under H2?
Yeah, okay. Good catch. Okay. The last thing, unless there's something more, but the only last thing is the staff stuff. So I just pulled that right out of our new intergovernmental agreement language that is going all around, so that it just is clear who staffs the commission and what each's responsibility is for that.
And the only thing I noticed on that is under J, there's a bunch of wills. Is that the right word to use?
Yeah, I think it's because we have to be.
So it wouldn't be shalls?
That's a good question.
And I crossed out pretty much everything on two, and probably this goes back to, maybe there's a difference here that I'm not quite catching, but it just seems to me that you do have the interlocal agreements with other cities, and so the assumption here, you know, you're just saying, just the city of Vancouver staff will review, but I think if we have other cities bring forward something, again, that was part of the whole outreach strategy, you know, that we were trying when we were visiting other cities was to try to, you know, encourage other cities to be bringing forward properties, even though it really hasn't happened. But shouldn't this cover them as well?
This is obviously confusion, and
yeah.
maybe it needs to be clarified because this has come up recently with this review,
mm-hmm.
is that the city of Vancouver is different than any other city with the historic program because
yeah.
they have their own staff that's required by their code
mm-hmm.
to review properties, whereas the other cities defer it to the county through the intergovernmental agreement. So that's why That's why that language is in here and in the intergovernmental agreement to make that clear, because I'm not going to review anything in the city of Vancouver, but I will review something in the city of Camas.
So maybe we need another number that says other cities or interlocal cities. What is their role?
What their role is. And I think that's what maybe the number three was trying to get, maybe. And maybe it just needs to be more explained better or added to.
Well, three seems to be referring to one and two.
That's what I thought it was.
Yeah. But I think there's a question of, because of the interlocal agreement, do the other city staffs need to be mentioned at all in this? Because basically they have delegated their entire role to the county.
But I think in the code it's like, but work with, or somewhere it's in here where it talks about city staff could be involved in the review if they so choose. You know, I think if there was something that they wanted to be involved in, it's open for that. But
well, then maybe that's the thing to say is that county staff will or shall collaborate with the interlocal cities on matters in their jurisdiction as they desire, or that they may contribute to the process. You know, something like that might be useful.
Some note, I would say, again, not to, because it does, again, if someone's not really fully aware, because we don't require that every member of this board be from the city of Vancouver, of course, so they might not come from a place where they understand why you would be calling out the city of Vancouver, and they're from the city of Battleground, and,
That's a good point.
Yeah, no, it is.
Okay.
Because, one reason to do that is to actually encourage the other cities to become more involved.
Right.
The one thing on the city of Vancouver, I don't know that you need to put development review division, because we do sometimes borrow staff from other divisions to do this, so
okay.
I think you can just say community. I'm not even sure you need to say Department of Community and Economic Development, but let's just stick with that and take out development review division.
Okay.
Because it changes, it's changed names like six times.
Sounds weird.
Yeah.
It's right, it sounds weird.
I'm just also wondering.
He knows.
Right.
Okay. Staff is plural all by itself. You don't actually add an S, right?
Right.
It's a collective, yeah.
Okay.
Staff.
But even when it's too independent.
I'm just wondering what they want to add.
Yes, staff.
Okay.
I don't think it ever gets an S.
Okay, that's all I had for the bylaws.
That's a good question, John, actually.
Staff
is plural.
Because tribe is a collective, but when there's more than one, it's tribes. Do you also have a grammarian that you can consult?
We probably do.
So I think that this would be a place to bring up that I do think that how the commission interacts with the heritage overlay districts and the city should be explicitly spelled out.
Yes, I agree.
Okay.
And what's part of what was, I think, in here before, I've talked about what staff does. So I pulled that out. I think they did. Because what we want to make sure that we do, especially as we have new staff, we want to make clear, kind of staff's responsibilities, especially for things that are outside of the normal review process, that are with the vacancies and what, so that as new staff comes on, we're like, here you go, this is how it all works.
Yeah.
So that's going to be also a part of this, just to help our side as well.
And one of the things that I said, kind of circling back, sorry, is might be worth discussing before you start putting stuff together is I think that the commission should express a formal opinion on the review projects.
That's a really good idea.
So that at the end, whatever the city decides to do on these, that it's on the record that because the county ordinance makes it very clear about the commission is supposed to be treated as the authority. So if the city does decide to go a way that the commission doesn't agree with, that to have that on record about this is what the commission recommended, and to have it be, I don't know if it's a formal vote, but
yeah, well,
a formal vote.
It could be a dissent. Mm-hmm.
Well, it could also be supportive. You know, there could be a condition that the staff, you know, is putting on a project or some conditions that maybe the applicant doesn't agree with, but commission agrees with the condition staff's put forward, and now you've got two groups that are supportive of, you know, so it can go both ways. It could mm-hmm. be dissent or it could be supportive, but it would at least be, yeah, I agree, fine, you know, some sort of, you know, providing that.
Okay.
All right.
That sounds good.
Okay, so next time, it was nice that we didn't have too much going on today, so we were able to do this. So we're going to chunk it out. If we have, like, a lot on the agenda, we're not going to give you something like this to go through. But if it's, like, a decent agenda, we don't have too much, and we won't be here too long, we'll add another. So we'll keep working.
What's your goal for getting it all?
I mean, this part took us, you know, almost an hour, you know. So it could take the year to get it done. So...
It's
okay.
Well, it's been 11 years since it was updated.
Exactly. And I don't think it ever really was updated. It was just kind of like tweaked a little bit. Yeah. So we'll go on to the next section, and I'll take another look at it since I didn't get a chance before, and then I'm going to send it to the committee, and then we'll get it ready for the next review process. So we'll just do it in smaller pieces.
Thanks for your help on this, Sharon.
Okay.
Well, that already came through. We said on the rules and procedures that I guess it's really just a committee. It's not a subcommittee. You can start talking about me now.
New business. Paper reduction plan.
I had a suggestion or question. We had a lot, and then we ended up throwing it away, you know, 2 hours later. We were just putting out a suggestion. Could we just bring one copy that share, that you need to see it, and we can
just
rely on the projector, or if you
want to
print at home, would that work?
Yeah.
I definitely, we talked about this too, I brought my own copies today. I print things off, and I mark them up, and I bring them, so I don't need copies at the meeting, and so how do you guys feel about needing copies here?
I'd love it if we had less paper.
Yeah, I would as well, but I think we should also shouldn't eliminate it as a possibility, so maybe, you know, just as it'll be electronic, and if any of us want a printout when we get here, to let you know.
I mean, I think Sharon said maybe we'll have one for sure for the commission.
A desk
and if you
copy
let us
thing.
Know before
a table
you.
Copy.
Yeah, a table copy.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
but I mean, when it comes to things
being
like
asked to review, you know, we either print them out or do them on the computer and stuff, and then to show up and have another copy, seems really wasteful.
Because you can't read through an entire nomination or something in at the meeting. So.
Sitting
yeah.
there.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so we'll bring one desk copy.
And then project it.
Project on the screen.
That'd be fine.
Okay, good.
Unless we get a request, and then we'll bring a specific one for somebody. Okay?
Cool.
All right. Old business.
Was I the CLG request?
She's down below.
I have my glasses on.
So for the CLG, this year's grant that's due in April, but one of the options is to apply, since the National Association of Preservation Commissioners Conference, that's every other year, is going to be in Tacoma, which is the one that Sean went to a couple years ago.
Isn't that in Iowa?
This is the conference for Preservation Commission. So it being right up, you know, up the road here is pretty great. So they're offering CLGs to apply for funding to send commission members. So since we didn't have any other really big projects that were in the hopper to work on, we thought that would be a great idea to get our commission members up there to the conference.
Sorry, so they agreed last month.
Okay, sorry.
But we need to know how many actually would attend, because if we put all seven of you, we don't think we'll get that grant. It's like $10,000. It's 5 days. It's the July 22nd to the 26th. Yeah, we kind of wanted to get a read on who could actually spend a week.
Right. So we need to know.
I can't.
Okay.
I would commit to it.
Okay.
Well, and it's 5 days, but the sessions are only three.
What does that mean?
So there's 5 days of events, but the actual individual sessions are only three, and then they have shoulder days that have, like, tours and
so 3 days?
And meetings. So
okay. We need to commit to 3 days, is that what we're asking?
So, yeah, I think that we would want to commit to at least the sessions, because that's when you actually learn the stuff.
Okay.
And that would bring down the cost. I would say, I mean, I'm not going to be on the commission then, but why not ask for at least 7 seats on this,
Okay. We just want to make sure people will, go.
I mean, I think Sharon just said that they didn't think 7, they'd fund 7.
They only have, what did they say, $80,000 to spread out
for the whole
year. So we're not going to get 10 of that as an eighth of their budget.
Well, my thought is it kind of happens with every grant. You ask for everything you want, and then they have to divvy. And then we come back and we say, okay, everybody, we've only got enough to send 4 of you.
Yeah.
We asked for all 7, but 4 of you can go.
But we also have to make, because we'll have to do a grant agreement. That means we're accepting the money and people are going.
Right?
So you're trying to get a commitment.
Kind of a commitment, yes. At least a pretty good commitment.
Depending on the commission, will I still be on the commission at that point?
It's July 22nd, 2020. Yeah.
I don't think so.
But
you're gonna have new people too. That's why I'm saying.
Yeah.
It would be really helpful for new people.
Yeah, but I mean, you're gonna have new people that are. So I don't know how you could get a commitment to.
Yeah.
It's not a commitment. It's just who could take a week off or.
I mean, if I was on the commission, I would say yes. I could be there for 3 days or 4 days.
End of June, right?
Yep, next year.
So you want to just put it in for all, and they'll have a unit cost, and then they can...
That's what I would suggest, at least, if you said 3 days for the entire commission, and I would, ask, and then be okay.
I think the grant agreement is usually in the late summer, fall,
yeah, we'll just
so we'll know.
Make sure that they have the ability to, because some grants, it's either you get it or you don't. And others will have the ability to reduce the amount, so just make sure that that's an option.
Well, by the time, when do they make the decision on the grant?
Pretty much early summer.
Yeah.
Next summer, right?
No,
this
summer. This summer. They'll make the decision by June, July.
So you'll have all your new people on the board by that time, by August.
Mm-hmm.
So then you can ask that question then to get commitments then.
Yeah.
Okay.
But then, I will be leaving 3 weeks before
the conference
yeah. Along with.
So we might not have 7.
Yeah.
Maybe there's staggered, so it's you and someone else.
Well, you'll be rocking. You'll want to send some staff, though, right, with this grant?
Say that again?
If you ask for 7, it might not be 7 for, and you get 7.
Yeah.
It might not be 7 commissioners. It might want to send 2 staff.
You could.
Sure. Right? Okay. So.
Potentially do that.
So
okay.
Leave it up to the future chair to divvy this up.
Okay.
Did you want to suggest doing a session on demolition?
I think that we should be proposing session or sessions for that one.
I haven't called for that. I didn't know.
The call won't be open until next year.
Okay. So what's the next year?
Well, then we should definitely have information back a year from now on the demolition, and how it went.
Yeah,
true. So we're talking about conferences, so I just submitted for the APT, Association of Preservation Technology, conference in Miami, which is going to be in November, but my work will be paying for that one. So I'm in for that. And just, it's relevant, I was invited to a symposium also by APT in Philadelphia in April on historic preservation and the building code. So there's 20 organizations were invited, and I'll be representing us.
Cool.
So I'll be at that one too. Which, about the one up in Seattle, I don't think I would go to that because evidently I'm going to be hitting the conference circuit hard in the next 6 months. Association of Preservation Technology.
So we're in Miami in November and again?
Miami in November, Philadelphia in April.
This April?
This April.
And you're saying that you're not interested in going to the
NAPC.
No, the NAPC, that's 2 years from now.
Yeah,
I'm interested in that one. No, the
The
archaeology.
Okay. The cultural resource,
sorry.
Are you presenting?
Which one?
The 2 APT ones.
So the APT is a symposium, so it's kind of like brains in a room. The other one, if I go, I'll be presenting. Okay. If my abstract doesn't get accepted, I won't be going.
All right, well, keep us posted.
Okay. All right, so back to the, like, budget and... So then that would mean we just need to figure out how much it would cost to send two of us up there if Sean can't go. So I don't know how much that,
we'll figure that out. And
okay.
We'll get back to you.
Whether or not we can afford it or not.
Yeah.
Did you
have
the budget
numbers?
So we have
a budget. Which one are we talking about?
That's for the cultural summit up in how do you say that? Suquamish tribe?
Suquamish.
I said that right? Okay. I said it earlier today at work, and everybody else chimed in and told me I wasn't saying it right. So, okay, thank you. All right, are we on to the next item? Mm-hmm. All right,
we are. So, okay. Just quickly, we have a citizen who has been pressing on the city to put the Old City Cemetery on the Heritage Register, which I actually thought it was, and it's not. So, the question is, I mean, we don't have time or internal expertise necessarily to write a register nomination for that piece of city property. We did have a meeting with the grounds and parks because with the people who oversee the cemetery, who aren't wildly excited about doing this, but they are okay with us putting it on the register. So the question is whether we wanted to do like we've done with like Loop Key and Kiggins and a few other buildings, the library and the center, and use some historic preservation money to hire someone to write a register nomination for the cemetery. The National Park Service actually did a pretty in-depth study of the cemetery 2 or 3 years ago, so there's a lot of information already that they have.
Which cemetery is this?
It's the one on down on Mill Plain in Grant, the old one with that people keep running into the fence because you can't see it. Never mind. I mean, that was one of the things, because the state has a cemetery grant program.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we really need with that cemetery is a sturdier fence that people can stop knocking over. So,
like the one on the post cemetery that my brother-in-law ran into. Kept him out, at least.
I feel like we have... we do need to have a fuller discussion because we put a few other items on the burner for future discussion on the budget, including the markers and whatnot, because we didn't know what kind of funding we were going to have in a few months, right?
So you have $2,184 left.
Mm-hmm. But if we're committing to the cultural summit,
have an effect of that,
sending a couple people to that, then there's probably not enough.
How about we take a look at what... Because we got to get the hotel and like figure out all this, and then maybe come because we could.
There's no urgency. I mean,
well, I meant well. We had the idea of putting together those what do we call those? The markers, the information.
The interpretive panel.
Interpretive panel. Thank you. Where we put those kind of aside until we knew what the budget was going to look like.
From the county.
Yeah.
$1,000.
Yeah.
So that was kind of from the county's budget.
Yeah, we were hoping that we could get that added in the supplemental process that's in the spring.
So we're thinking those markers have to come from the county budget.
Well, we were hoping that they would.
And so the budget that
Jan's talking.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to make sure
that
we weren't forgetting some other things that are on our wish list for the year. You know, without just a citizen comes forward on one item, just like. I was one of those citizens that asked, like, why isn't the witness tree listed? You know, I didn't realize it wasn't, but I'd had a person asking me. It was a funny conversation, but I was talking to a new police officer, and he was saying, why doesn't the city of Vancouver have a ground zero? Every city has a ground zero. And I go, we have a ground zero. I said, we have a witness tree, or we used to. And I was explaining, and I went to go on the app and show it to him, and it wasn't there. And I thought, well, that's funny, you know. So
it's hard to put something on the Heritage Register that no longer exists. That is just literally a little marker in the parking lot at Hoosling and Larry's.
That's so, what it is?
Well, we put an interpretive panel down there as close as we could get to that location, but the tree itself has been long gone, and there's literally a bronze marker in the parking lot. So that feels like a weird thing to put on the Heritage Register, because there's no
Nothing.
Well, people intangible. Do
put the, yeah. It is, though.
Put markers on the registers, you know, for better or for worse.
But we put an interpretive panel, and we can put it on the app.
Yeah.
That's what I was suggesting.
Yeah. Probably all the panels should be on the app.
But through my question to staff last week or a couple weeks ago, it was that we would need to do a nomination, and then, you know, so it kind of went down that path, and I thought...
When we're talking about nominate a cemetery than a marker in a parking lot.
Okay. But that's what I'm. That's why I'm bringing this up is, you know, we get these ideas in our, you know, people bring us ideas and whatnot, and to have kind of a parking lot of some of those ideas so that we don't, so that we're making, you know, well informed good decisions on.
Well, no, like you're. I don't know if we're still like. Staying in this, but part of your budget discussion early on was to, you know, chunk it out, like, what's your goals on what you want to do, and one was direct preservation, and that was to encourage more donations and get more things on the register that you can protect. Mm-hmm. So,
do we have any other items like this? Kind of on the edge nominations?
No, because we're working on Parkersville's coming in next month, and that was kind of the one that we were.
So the same person who wants to put the city cemetery on the register also wants to put the Haup Neighborhood Association on the Heritage Register as a historic neighborhood. It's already on the state register as a historic neighborhood. It's Vancouver's only historic neighborhood. The problem with trying to do it on the local register is it is not just writing a nomination. There has to be design standards, and it is, and 50% of the residents have to sign off on the design standards, and so that we've just said no to that because we don't have the ability to do that work. So that's the only other one that I'm aware of that's floating around out there. I don't know if Mark, no. So because the other historic buildings that the city owns, for the most part, are already, I mean, historic museums, Slocum, Covington. Officers Row, they're already on the register.
Officers Row is not on the county register.
It's on the, but it's on the national and state.
It's not on the county register.
That was deliberate. Actually, the library, the old library building is eligible now, and with the plan to redo it, it's like...
No plan, right?
Yeah, it's like, should we put that on the register?
Well, actually, you know, thinking about that, there are a couple of absences, you know, of pretty significant buildings that aren't on the county register, and I wouldn't mind prioritizing those. And I mean, that's not to say that the city cemetery shouldn't be on that list, but I think that there are a few that we should be encouraging.
Are they publicly owned?
Some of them.
You can put a publicly owned building on without the owner's permission.
Well, you get the owner's permission. But.
Well, isn't the We still have to get the city as the owner. Still has to.
Do we?
Oh yeah, you'd have to sign it. Yeah, you can't. Doesn't matter.
Because Jim Moeller always used to threaten me with that old library building and saying, "You don't even need the city's permission to do it."
I think that might be for the local heritage register. We need signatures.
Okay, so maybe he was thinking about one of the other ones.
So are you asking for a priority list so that?
Or a discussion of.
I think a discussion before we commit, you know, funding to a particular one. To think, are there others that we should be discussing
exactly.
At the same time?
That's the whole idea, and just make sure that we're, you know, before we make it. And when we have the rest of the commission here too next month, it'd be good to make a decision on it.
Okay, that's fine. I don't feel strongly about the cemetery one way or the other, so.
And it might rise to the top. Regardless, but yeah. And maybe we could also invite our commission members, you know, if you have some ideas to throw them out there and mm-hmm. send them to share. All right.
The yearly invitation for the buildings that we find significant that should be on the we encourage you.
it kind of goes to a conversation the demolition committee had and when we were at least. When I was doing some initial looking around at different cities too, and I came across the article I shared from Seattle, but you know they have the groups that get so
you know, passionate about making lists of their endangered buildings, you know, and maybe they're not even in danger for being, you know, demolished, but just the idea that they're getting run down or, you know, and just having more people, you know, maybe that's where the demolition committee can go at some point, where you would then have kind of lists of these endangered buildings where community members could kind of do their own fundraisers to help bring them up, you know, rehabilitate them so that they're not so deteriorated that they are something that people decide to demolish rather than fix. I mean, you could start. This could lead to great and amazing things. That's all I'm
put
saying.
Put pressure on owners to put them on the.
But they have to be on the list. They have to be on the list, and if they're not on the list, then on the register, then.
Or, yeah, I mean, you know, one of our jobs is to publicize the Clark County cultural inventory, and you know, having a list of, like you say, endangered buildings, and be a good first step towards that publicizing stuff.
All right, do we have any other old business? Any more new business? All right, do we have public comment?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I have...
Can you tell us your name?
My name is Nancy McCarter. Excuse me, I'm getting over chest cold. But I have paper for you. I think there's enough for everybody if you're interested. The first three pages are my written testimony, followed by four pages of pictures, and then it ends with testimony that I provided to the city council. I was heartened to hear my neighborhood mentioned tonight, and I wanted you to be aware of some of the frustration that residents have dealing with the city in our historic neighborhood. I'll be making some references to 1739 of the Vancouver Municipal Code in tonight's comments. I will be addressing some concerns as to recent potential and proposed activities in Vancouver's only historic neighborhood district, HOUT. In VMC 173910, the purpose and intent of the ordinance is clearly stated to safeguard, increase recognition, foster identity, assist and encourage incentives regarding Vancouver's cultural and historic resources. Subsection E notes the duty to promote and facilitate the early identification and resolution of conflicts between preservation of cultural and historic resources and alternative land use. Health Neighborhood was first nominated for inclusion on the Washington State Heritage Register in 2003. It was subsequently listed as a neighborhood historic district. The neighborhood is noted for containing the largest post-fur trade and pre-World War II housing inventory in the area. An official inventory of the neighborhood was completed in 2008, and it's noted that many of the buildings inventoried for this project have retained their integrity of location, design, setting, workmanship, material, feelings, and associations. Homes surveyed for this report possess architectural or aesthetic qualities in sufficient concentration to qualify them for inclusion into the National Register of Historic Places. I'm here tonight to talk about how neighborhood historic districts and pressures being exerted that pose a risk to the integrity of our historic resource. I have included three cases, all occurring within the last 2 years. Submission one is the 1913 picture of a contractor's stamp on the corner of Washington and 20th. Last year, the City of Vancouver paving management was directed to replace 100-year-old curbs with ADA-compliant ramps. I was concerned the contractor stamp details on most corners would be lost and contacted paving management. I was told at the time, on December of 2017, that their program included cutting out one stamp per intersection, regardless of how many existed, and placing it loosely somewhere in the parking strip. In discussion with the city, it became apparent that they saw no problem in leaving the cut stamp exposed on all sides to the elements and removed from its original context. They resisted the suggestion that the stamp should be embedded. I was concerned this did not represent a best practice for preservation, and the staff was left prone to theft, weathering, and it posed a mowing hazard for the homeowner and a tripping hazard for the public. I began to research preservation practices for contractor stamps and found information from several municipalities, one of whom had developed a standard detail page for inclusion into their design standards manual. I contacted the chief technician at the National Concrete Testing Lab and industry trade organization to discuss materials and processes for embedding old concrete into new concrete. With this information, I was able to find one sympathetic engineer in paving management, and I worked with him to preserve the contractor stamps. The paving management department I worked with on this project had no knowledge of historic significance, no knowledge they were working in an historic neighborhood, and no plan for treating construction within the boundary of the historic district any different than any other project. It was luck that connected me with a sympathetic engineer, and it was luck alone that preserved the detail. Submission 2 is my garage, and I do think I have a beautiful garage. It was evaluated by an architectural historian who placed it in 1920 to 1930 and noted that it was a significant structure. It is a 1920 to 30 addition to a 1908 home. Infill of construction of ADUs makes a lot of sense, and it should be included in urban centers, but a huge problem exists when the city does not recognize an historic area and has not developed standards to preserve and honor historic building practices. I went to the City of Vancouver Building Permit Center for information about conversion to a small ADU, and I was told I needed to demolish my garage and move it back 5 feet. We are in no pressing need for an ADU, so we will leave it as is, unusable as a garage, but preserved. The current city approach to infill is encouraging people to demolish rather than preserve, adapt, and retain their own structures. The permit department I worked with had no knowledge of historic significance. No knowledge. The permit was for work in an historic district, had no plan for treating construction within the boundary of the historic district any different than any other project. Submission 3 and 4, bike lanes and proposed bollards. The Westside Bike Mobility Project has come to town. While most neighbors support some form of bike access, the lack of planning and radical removal of street parking is posing a severe threat to the neighborhood. The project doesn't address the impact when areas reliant on street parking are stripped of their access. With no design standards or guidelines for off-street parking to protect the integrity of the historic neighborhood, the pressures are likely to cause chaotic and destructive approach to parking as neighbors are forced to abandon a century-old practice and desperately seek any solution they can find. Some residents with old, unusable off-alley garages and carriage houses are told by the city they can't make improvements and the structure must be demolished and rebuilt. Where a century-old practice of street parking existed, it is slated to be replaced with no parking and white plastic wands and bollards running up and down the historic neighborhood streets. When transportation planning was approached with the information they were working in an historic neighborhood, they were unaware. The department had no knowledge of historic significance, no knowledge they were working in an historic neighborhood, no plan for treating construction within the boundaries of an historic neighborhood any different than any other project. I provided testimony to the Vancouver City Council on February 11th. I urged involvement of the Historic Preservation Commission and the Bike Mobility Project. This urging was not transcribed into the minutes, so I have attached my written testimony in Submission 5. I note in VMC 1739050, the Office of Heritage Services is required to provide heritage education services for both the City of Vancouver and Clark County. I would like to suggest the Office of Heritage Service start with the city staff, none of whom seem to be aware of Hauk Neighborhood Historic District, none of whom seem to consider that our designation is meaningful and worthy of consideration, none of whom consider this fact in any of their decisions. Transportation planning didn't know about the listing or consider its importance in their design. The Office of Paving Management didn't know about the listing. The Building Permit Department doesn't consider construction in an historic district is any different from construction in a non-historic district. Over the last 2 years, the City of Vancouver Planning Department has been approached to develop guidelines for the historic district, and their response has always been they're too busy. Where is the Office of Heritage Services to facilitate the resolution of these conflicts? Under VM 1739010, the city has a statutory obligation, and I believe it's time for them to engage in responsible advocacy for their historic resources. When I started to become interested in historic preservation several years ago, I used to say history is lost a shovelful at a time. I now see a bigger threat is inaction and indifference. A city government that reacts in response to development pressures and refuses to advocate on behalf of its historic resources poses the greatest risk to our historic neighborhood district. I would like to ask the commission to advise me on how to obtain responsible action from the city. I would like to become a better advocate, and I am wondering how the survival of Vancouver's only historic neighborhood can be on firmer ground. If historic preservation depends on one lone individual noticing destructive actions at the moment they're occurring, then our history will be lost. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any thoughts or anything that we'd like to...
What does ADU stand for?
Accessory Dwelling Unit.
Thank you.
Well, this ties into what we've been working on the demolition committee, and we use the house in Hauk Neighborhood as an example. You're probably familiar with the house.
And yeah.
It's tough. I mean, I'm thankful for your efforts and for going through this. I find it, just speaking personally, I find it frustrating. You know, I live in Carter Park neighborhood.
Yeah.
I've got a 1921 house with a garage that's just like this garage. And, you know, I think about what I'd like to do with it and what I really couldn't do without demolishing it. You know, we've talked about ADUs and that kind of thing. So, And you know, clearly the commission would like to be included on things like bike mobility projects. Oftentimes, if we are, we're brought in kind of late in the process. Okay. You found that?
With the TriMet project.
With the TriMet, with the Vine.
Right.
I think we're sympathetic, and it's tough to get everybody aware and working on the same page. Our neighborhood had the curb cuts redone a couple of years ago, and I called the city and said, "What are you doing with those contractor stamps?"
Yeah.
"Oh, we documented them and we're going to preserve them." And I kind of let it go at that. And I see them in the parking strip area, whatever that area is called. And
yeah.
A lot of them have disappeared under the grass.
They do. It wasn't
or walked off or whatever.
Yeah.
So.
Well, given the amount of information, you know, I would say that this might be a good topic to talk, actually have it on the agenda.
The bike mobility project was tabled, right, by city council.
Well,
they asked for more information.
It's coming back on March 25th.
Oh, it is.
As an hour-long workshop, and then make potentially a decision.
On that same night?
Are you aware of that?
I am aware. I've been attending all meetings, and I am representing just a resident of Hauk tonight, but I'm involved with several groups that are trying to get the city to consider the impacts when you don't have a comprehensive pricing alternative for a 100-year-old neighborhood that has no other place to park. What's going to happen? We're going to see accelerated damage as people desperately try and find where to fit their car.
Is this something that would trigger a CEQA review? Since it's a state listed.
So there should have been a CEQA review for this?
Well, right
for
now.
The bike
mobility.
What
it acts to construct,
yeah. Maybe. I don't know.
That's a good question,
yeah.
And I don't know. And, you know, would DAP be looped in? I mean, you know, the question is, what does being on the Washington's register get you? I mean, is there
honorary
any regulatory?
Honorary designation.
No regulatory.
Nobody knows about it. I mean, you know, Holly.
Well, it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't get you anything if the city doesn't follow up and do the subsequent.
It makes you one of the things that become subject to a 106 review of federal fundings, and then I do think it makes you subject to CEPA.
If people are aware. I mean, that's the thing. Planning isn't even, you know, this is the same thing with the demolition permit,
mm-hmm.
right? You just don't have the people in county or city government who are seeing permit applications come across their desk aware of the context in which that property is situated, whether it's in a historic overlay or it's in a historic neighborhood that's listed on which register and what does that mean? I mean, it's...
Well, it's funny when they notice and funny when they don't.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, part of me thinks that we would put it on the agenda more as an item to go along with that, kind of a re-energizing action to go back to all the cities again, because our original discussion about going to the cities was we're going to first talk to the city council, and then the next time around we were going to dive deeper and start meeting with staff, because what I've been saying, you know, since I've started here is I don't think a lot of staff, and you know, there are very likely city staff that are very much aware of Hauk neighborhood's designation, but it's not the people that you talk to, so we just need to figure out a better way to keep going back and making the frontline staff very aware of, you know, the tools. I mean, that was part of the positive tools to historic preservation, to get them to identify these houses, to bring them to us, you know, and these structures, and make sure that it trickles down.
Yeah, I mean, part of the rationale for putting structures and districts on these registers is so that it can serve as a planning tool,
mm-hmm.
in a sense.
Right.
But that's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, how?
I was just going to mention that at the time that I wrote the nomination, it was distinctly decided that the neighborhood was not interested in applying for the local or national register at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So we opted for the Heritage Register as an educational tool.
The Washington.
Right. And so it's true that there's not much meat in the Washington Heritage Register. It's primarily honorary, but at the time it was used as a way to compile some of the research information together in one place and hopefully potentially interest neighbors down the road in higher level listing.
And unfortunately, I think what's happened is it's sort of lost sight. Its status as a Washington State Heritage listee is. I just don't think there's much awareness,
mm-hmm.
Of it, and you know, that lack of meat probably perpetuates that.
Well, and it is challenging.
Visible.
They don't actually. We had to fight a little bit to get it listed on the Heritage Washington Register,
mm-hmm.
Because it's a difficult thing to administer with, you know, what properties are actually continuing to be in existence. There's no monitoring or anything. But anyway, that was the rationale to take that step at that time.
Mm-hmm.
That's good to know.
What about the idea of us targeting some actual neighborhoods, not just Hauk, but that we actually go to some of the neighborhood meetings? We could actually be on their agendas and do more outreach directly to the property owners, maybe have it on our plan for, you know, this year.
I think that would be more of an impact.
I
think when it comes time when people are feeling pressed up against the wall because there's something looming, you know, that's not the time to be making the greatest decisions. And I do think that a lot of people, when they hear anything to do with their private property, they start feeling, you know, I don't want that happening. But so for us to be going to the neighborhood associations, I mean, you know, like I'm sandwiched between Haug and Lincoln, two neighborhoods with more historic notoriety, and being on the Carter Park Neighborhood Association, I think it would be great to have somebody from the commission come and talk about the various registers and, you know, what that would mean, and so that we're not at the last, you know, the 11th hour when there's some project that's being proposed, people are scrambling for stuff. I mean, that's, you know, kind of reactive.
In the opinion, and Hauk may have changed. I mean, Laurelhurst is going for listing now in Portland, and that's a huge change, and it's just because they felt their neighborhood was being threatened by development.
Yeah, I mean, and things, in the economy the way it is, things are rapidly changing, and, you know, the ADU question is one that is, all three of those neighborhoods are seeing that, and I think there are good intentions, and we know what the road to good intentions, you know.
Well, I know in my neighborhood, people love the idea of bikes and ADUs.
Mm-hmm.
They don't love the idea of the destructive way it's being proposed and what it means for the history of the neighborhood. Because we're losing it.
So I guess one question, I guess, for staff is, I mean, if, you know, right now that neighborhood, yeah, it's got the state listing that carries very little. You've talked about how, you know, it is a big lift to create a neighborhood locally designated.
Right.
So does the city have any obligation to help with that, and it's just not been able to?
I mean, there are historic neighborhoods identified. I mean, there is a code
right
already in place that we could do a historic neighborhood. It's just you would have to survey it again. You would have to develop the design standards, and
right,
then you would have to get 50% of the homeowners in the neighborhood to sign off on the design standards. We made one run at this in Fruit Valley, and as soon as the neighborhood association, I mean, people were all for it until they found out there were going to be design guidelines they had to follow, and then it went up in flames, and they were all in the city council screaming at them about how dare they, you know, try to impose something on them. So we just said, okay.
But as far as getting all of that put into place, it's a
capacity issue.
So,
I mean, it's not that anybody's opposed to it. I would love to see Hauk be a historic neighborhood on the local register,
mm-hmm,
but no one has the time. I mean, it would take a lot of time to do that, those three phases of the work. And really, the outreach and getting 50% of the neighbors to sign on to the design guidelines is the hardest piece.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and, you know, part of that neighborhood is, I mean, some of those nice contributing structures or businesses, you know, that sort of falls in between.
So I guess that doesn't quite answer the question that I was asking, though. That, you know, normally when a neighborhood wants to get listed as a historic district, the neighborhood is on the hook for doing the legwork.
Right.
In most jurisdictions. And I can't remember what the ordinance here says. So is the neighborhood on the hook for actually doing the legwork?
It doesn't say who does the legwork.
Who does it? So the city isn't obligated.
We're
to
not obligated
help do it.
No.
You're obligated to make it to
make sure.
It's just
make sure it happens.
Right. Well, we're not even obligated to make sure it happens.
I mean to accept a nomination and all of that stuff.
Right. But it's, you know, is the neighborhood association going to be able to write design guidelines?
Mm-hmm.
Because those then become embedded in the code. And so, obviously, there's going to be work by city staff to make sure that
right
those guidelines that are proposed are actually workable. And
well, it is possible, like you said, that the neighborhood themselves may have capacity within their neighborhood. They might actually have planners.
Wasn't
whatnot,
the historic,
you know?
The original historic survey, wasn't that partly a DAP grant? A CLG grant?
CLG. Yes, it was done through what was then the Heritage Trust of Clark County. There have been a couple different phases, but at least part of it was Heritage Trust work. And there was a lot of neighborhood input and, you know, volunteer researchers and that kind of thing.
So yeah. I think the answer, at least part of the answer to your question, is when it comes to historic preservation, there's a lot that can be done on advocacy, and a lot that actually happens in these designations are honorary. They don't have much teeth to them. You know, when it comes to actual protections, really the only protections that are afforded to historic buildings and historic districts in Clark County is being on the local heritage register. No, that's the only explicit protection that there is. And so that's kind of the route. And, you know, you've heard from the city what the obstacles are from their side on getting a district in place for HAUK. And in most places it is. The district makes it happen. They find a grant. You know, sometimes the, you know, like in Laurelhurst, they actually pooled their money to hire somebody to do it. The neighborhood association, you know, paid for it. But you know, that's that is going to be an obstacle to making that happen and getting, you know, real protections in place, because that's where the real protections come
right.
from.
Right. And can I ask a question about that?
Mm-hmm.
If the code requires advocacy for resolution of conflicts, which is what you get when you get old things butting up against new things, then to me, in my mind, my simple citizen mind, that means that somewhere in the city offices we have a champion, even if we aren't on the list, that we can go in and say, hey, have they thought about this? What I'm finding is nobody, the entire transportation planning department, had no idea they were planning 3 bike highways through an historic neighborhood.
I think, yeah. You've actually come to the committee that would be the champion, because this is actually what we've been talking about earlier tonight. But it's, you know, we are supposed to be working with cities and, you know, counties, and the city has
staffs.
But, you know, that's part of our role is but also probably what you're listening to us talk about earlier was our balancing, trying to figure out all of these other things that we as a committee can even tackle every year. And so putting it on our radar is as something as we can continue to think, as we have seem to have an amazingly strong group of people that volunteer for this job, and you know, they can bring new skills or new ideas, or they have a connection or network that can usually, you know, figure some of these things out and figure out how.
I really appreciate it.
But it's just, like I said, you brought it to us tonight, and that's why I suggested, you know, putting it on a future agenda item to really.
I think so.
You know, so then we have some more time to think about it. And.
But there is a March 23rd meeting
about the bike lanes.
About the bike lanes.
So, you know, Vancouver does have something that a lot of other jurisdictions don't have, which is this Office of Heritage Services.
No, they don't.
Which we do not. So, I mean, officially, there is. So there's no one that actually...
No, that went away in a long time ago.
Okay.
No, you get to call the Office of Heritage Services, and it's not its own. There's no Office of Heritage Services.
There was 20 years ago.
So even though, but the code still references.
Well, we have a lot of really old code, and the Heritage Code is definitely on that list.
There's a dance hall code. It's dance halls, by the way, that I'm just like, seriously, when I was reading that the other day. But anyways, there's a lot
there's,
of old
yeah,
code.
There's
I really appreciate everybody listening.
Right, so...
Sorry, I'm raising my hand behind you.
I can't see behind me.
I know. No, I was just going to mention, I looked up the Heritage Register in terms of SEPA, and it comes into play when a subdivision of state government or recipient of state funds has to comply with SEPA for projects.
So this project may or may not.
So if there's no state money
then there would be
in the
no
bike
SEPA.
Lanes, there's no SEPA requirement.
Yeah.
That's
state
that's
or federal money.
Not an expert.
State and federal or just federal?
I think it's...
It's just state in this case. For the
state. If there's federal, then it would be a Section 106 review.
Right.
But if there are no state funds behind the bike mobility, then there wouldn't be a SEPA.
Right.
But non-project actions are subject
That's right,
to SEPA.
Yeah.
So this bike lane project has to have gone through SEPA somewhere.
I have no idea.
It would only go through once the project is actually in a proposed stage. They'd go through their pre-app. During their pre-app, the city would come back and say, well, it's the city doing it, but you have to comply with SEPA being one of the things.
It's kind of one of the weaknesses of SEPA is it's kind of at the end.
Yeah, I think that
you can do pre-SEPA negotiations.
Due diligence, yeah. You know, if you
don't have
wetlands and archaeology and whatever to do. And, you know, DAP should be one of those state agencies that's looped in on the SEPA review. So,
if this project doesn't have SEPA, that might be a problem.
Well, the question is, you said, none of us here has all the details on the project, but I assume that the project was at the stage of them reviewing options that they haven't. They haven't
funding thought. Through WSDOT.
I don't know.
I try to stay out of all the transportation.
I would think it would have to either be SEPA.
Do you know?
EO 505 or Section 106, depending on the funding.
Right. It's just city repaving. It's okay.
Yeah. And we're just in the option stage,
That's
what I just.
Chair Fox says I don't know that we're, but I don't know either. I'm not in that group.
If the commission wants to weigh in, there's an opportunity on the 25th. Do we want to have a subcommittee? Because at this point we can't put together official thoughts and
did they have a hearing on it already? That they continued it? Are they just having a work session?
They're having a work session.
Is a hearing scheduled?
Because
it's just a work session and the hearing hasn't been calendared.
They're not going to hearing.
Okay, so
it's a repaving project. It's a repaving project.
It's taking it slow because there is a lot of citizen engagement.
Okay, so we could have a discussion.
Just a controversial
paving project.
Well, you know, the thing is, it went through this whole process, the little I know about it, to get to this point, and then we didn't have the funding, so it just sort of kind of sat there on the back burner for a few years, and then the funding's available, so they're ready to move forward with it, and they didn't turn around to do another set of public outreach, so here they are, you know. People have changed over, property ownership's changed over in the last couple of years, and
I do find it interesting. I mean, I've lived in the same neighborhood for 15 years, and this outreach that they started this year was the first time I remember seeing things about this bike lane project. So,
yeah,
if they did it beforehand, I don't know what sort of outreach they did because
I
do read my mail, I do read the newspaper, so yeah, makes you wonder, but.
I was on the Neighborhood Association.
Exactly. I've been involved in the Neighborhood Association. So it's interesting, yeah. But
so there's going to be an hour workshop on, I think it's the 25th, whatever that last Monday is. Mm-hmm. And then that night there's also public comment taken, so they do a citizens forum. So they are fully anticipating that there will be a full house.
Yeah. And, you know, there's, you definitely could testify for yourself, you know, but I don't think that we have enough information tonight at all to make any sort of decision where we could weigh in as a commission before.
Well, I mean, would it be too much of a stretch to just request that perhaps the, you know, options that are decided upon or whatever, that the HPC be included as an interested party? Because it is going through a historic neighborhood. I mean, that's pretty non-committal, and it's something that sort of in our stated goals is to be involved and have opinions on projects going on in the city and county, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was just trying to imagine, but I would imagine we could send a message to the lead staff and ask them if they could add us. Yeah, why not? And
right, but Anna Dearman on the bottom of the
right. Yeah.
but.
Because I think the only kind of real official thing that we could do is encourage them to be conscious of the impact on a historic neighborhood.
But that's just one more voice, right?
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, concerned citizen A and concerned who, you know, they're probably seeing as NIMBY.
Well, no, I mean, as a commission, we could, in general terms, to be conscious.
Remind them it's a historic neighborhood.
Yeah, it's a historic neighborhood on the state register.
Raise awareness of the historic issues.
But I think it would be really wonderful if I could just jump in, because right now what they're doing when they realize that there were some issues with parking is they're just willy-nilly looking for some way to change any street they can to get head-on so they can get three more cars on it. And they're just doing this shotgun scatter to take care of these problems. And we love bikes. We love historic neighborhoods. I don't have a problem with bikes. I have a problem with an incomplete plan that's going to harm the neighborhood. That's the problem I have.
So it sounds to me like what we would like to do is send just a letter to Anna Dearman, head of this project, to say that as a commission, we would like to bring awareness to the historic neighborhood and any design or whatever ideas that may affect this neighborhood.
Do you want to send it to the city council with a copy to Anna? So it's part of the public record?
Yeah.
So something along those lines, just to bring an awareness that we're an interested party, awareness letter sort of thing. Is that what we'd like to do? Okay, because then I can work with staff and finalizing it and then just send it out and sign it as chair without having, because we can't make any decisions after we leave this room, so I'm just being clear as to what our content is.
Would you like a motion?
That's what I was about. Yeah. This is what I was working up to.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I move that the Historic Preservation Commission go on record to the Vancouver City Council and Senior Planner Anna Dearman to the effect that we encourage them to take into account the Hauk neighborhood's historic designation when moving forward with the bike plan. That sounded about right.
Okay, do we have a second?
I second that motion.
Make sure.
All right, now we'll have discussion.
That you authorize Sarah to write that letter.
And that we would like to be considered an interested party.
So, make it as a friendly amendment to his motion.
So the friendly amendment is that we ensure that we say that it's also, we want to be an interested party in the plans and development of that area, and that you're authorizing chair to sign this letter.
I concur.
Is that right? Okay.
And I second the motion as amended.
Okay. Are we ready to vote?
No.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No. Okay. Good. All right. I think, do we have any other public comment today?
My name is Nick Fazio. I am the Assistant Long Range Planner in Cowles County. And when I'm trying to be fancy, I also tell people that I'm the Historic Preservation Officer of Cowles County, which means I'm the Historic Preservation Planner and I manage the program there. I'll try and be concise. I didn't plan on commenting, but then you brought up your comment, and I thought maybe in the spirit of us all learning together and learning from each other, I had a couple thoughts. One is our Historic Preservation Commission struggled greatly over the past couple years with not being included in communications, people not knowing we exist, people not knowing that we as a certified local government are obligated to speak and advocate on behalf of the historic and cultural resources themselves in the common interest of the people, and nobody was going to give a shit. So our Historic Preservation Commission really had to switch their mindset from being somebody that people come to us and we really have to go chase down our own involvement. And I recognize that there's quite a big difference between Clark County and Vancouver and Cowles County. We've only 107,000 people, so we're obviously much smaller. But I think the challenge still remains that, people and other agencies, including our own agencies, don't know
that we exist or that they have an obligation or responsibility to consider cultural and historic resources at all levels of the project planning stages. Recognizing that this may not be the right fit, but I think there's lots of different options for Clark and Vancouver. Somebody from our Public Works Department comes to every one of our Historic Preservation Commission meetings. That's a big ask for staff members. I recognize that they may not always be able to come, but in their absence, they also have a designated department liaison who gets copied on communications from the Historic Preservation Commission. They get a monthly update, which is usually no more than me sending them like a quick paragraph. It takes all of 45 seconds for me to kind of update them. But that way, there's no excuse for Public Works to never not be in the loop or involved or in the know that, hey, there are resources that you need to be taking into consideration. Primarily because they came to us at one meeting super pissed off, like accusing us of kind of working in a backdoor deal with DAP, saying that we're trying to hamstring all of their paving projects and their resurfacing projects and all of their road projects. I'm going to say, no. The law has been this way for a long time. If you haven't been catching and keeping up with your public works responsibilities to do proper evaluation of historic resources, that's on you and your department. You've been circumventing the law. So there are presumably lots of projects that are public works or paving related that have no state or federal funds tied to them, but there's also a lot that do. And if there's even a single penny or any sort of action that's required, they must review it, and they should be doing that in consultation with you, or at least they do that with us. But they didn't want to. We had to really harp on them and sort of like build a good relationship, which is now much improved. The second thought I had was, as a CLG, we find our best option to advocate for resources is to use SEPA authority. We do not have many things on our register at all, and that presents a challenge because that's where the teeth is if it's on your register. So we really use SEPA authority as our tool to make substantive comments specifically for projects. Any big project that's truly going to have an effect on historic resources at a larger scale is going to have to go through SEPA. And I don't know if your commission ever makes SEPA comments, but it seemed to work out really well for us. And DAP, Stephanie Jolivet at DAP, has really been on our tail a lot. I mean, she's making comments essentially with every public works project, every urban subdivision, occasionally even short bus. Like, I mean, she's really all over it. Probably because Cowles County doesn't have a long history or a good history of like really doing anything with historic resources. So I think we're under their watchful eye.
Clark County has in Vancouver and the municipalities have a SEPA tied process that's unique in the state that does grabs in DAP automatically. So
does it tie in you guys automatically?
No.
So that's something we worked at Cowles County, was if DAP is commenting on a SEPA, our Historic Preservation Commission also is likely to comment, almost without exception. If DAP considers it important enough to comment, so does our Historic Preservation Commission. Again, take what you want or don't want from
very high
what we're doing. Yeah, I know.
Well,
I mean, it's a lot of work. You also have more people to spread this around. Yeah. I'm only third time, and it's just me. Not wanting to give you guys more work because I know what it's like, but I'm just trying to think of ways to respond to the need. You aren't the only staff that is responsible for acknowledging historic and cultural resources. your public works department, your roads department, anybody that touches policy or permits, they are responsible. And sometimes they just need like a reminder, like a clock in the face saying, you guys aren't living up to your responsibilities and your obligations. And then the third thing, and this is my last departing thought, is trying to thinking of my own colleagues and thinking of my own workload, it was really important that we figured out ways to make it very, very easy and very plain to see for like frontline counter staff that maybe they should bother sending an email to the Historic Preservation Commission, even if it's nothing more than a, hey, like, are there any red flags about this, or can I move forward without any problems? I don't know what Clark and Vancouver have. We have an online EPIC system that any building permit that goes through, they open this permit system. It's tied now, and it wasn't, but now it is, tied to both our register and our inventory. That's good. And hopefully your building staff, your planning staff, your public works staff, when they go through any of that online system.
Do your demolition permits go through that?
They do, everything. So it's kind of one of those things that, you know, the frontline counter staff, I mean, they miss it, you know, frequently, but at least it's there, and with sort of occasional reminders, mm-hmm. right, we see like a general upward trend that they're emailing us and staying in communication more.
We have for the county and the city, I believe, as well, the city of Vancouver, all permits or all properties that are on our register are flagged and cannot get a building permit
until
a staff signs off on it.
Do you find that helps catch?
Well, yeah, because that's the
issues.
Only, I mean, yeah, so we yeah. have all our local register and state register and national register and inventory, and although commission doesn't have any authority to tell a property owner what to do with anything other than the local register,
sure.
at least gives me an opportunity to reach out to that property owner and be like, think about putting it on the local register, and these are the reasons why. So we use it as, you know, both as an awareness, like, there's some other options you can choose from, but keep a track of things that are
sure.
going on.
Sure. Well, it sounds like you guys have a good system then.
It's a lot.
And we also, well, you guys are building a lot more than we are, but
yeah, and we also, you know, not only like the city of Vancouver does their own thing, but we county staff does all this the smaller cities historic preservation stuff. So we have to coordinate with all the six other cities and towns on making sure that we coordinate with them on things that are on their register and things that are listed. So
it's a lot. My real reason for coming is because I want to hear more about your interlocal agreement at a later date, because
okay.
we're doing
sure,
that at Cowles County too.
Yeah.
But anyway. Mm-hmm. Anyway, food for thought. I don't know if it's helpful. Probably not. You guys have a much more experienced program than we do. But I'm hearing a lot of the same challenges. And
a card on you or send an email?
I can, yeah. Are you sharing?
Yes.
Okay.
I have Nick's info, too. He's actually one of our planners in the Southwest Washington APA as well, so
cool.
on our board.
Cool.
I don't know if I do much.
You show up to meetings. That was my campaign strategy when I to be the president on the Southwest Washington APAs. I said I'll show up at all the meetings, and I won. I did, and I have I missed a meeting.
Only that I'd work for city council. I'll show up at all the meetings.
Oh my goodness! All right, do we have any other business?
All right. I wanted to let you know that the Heritage Farm. Is update. They're doing their master plan update, so they're going to be here next month
cool.
to give an update, a presentation on that, on where they are with that process.
Very good.
It'll be informational.
We'll also have a public hearing for the Parker's Hill right next
year. Yeah.
We're going to be busy, so hopefully everybody shows up at this meeting. I know we had some traveling people, that's why we didn't have full commission tonight, so they're off the hook. But, all right, I will entertain a motion to
so
adjourn.
Moved.
Okay, one second.
Seconded.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. We'll be back at Public Service Center.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, all. Hey.
Hi.
Good job.
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
I hope we help. I recognize you. You used to come
still
here, right?
I still want to.
Oh, you're still. Are you still
I
there?
Here?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Although I am retired.
But then you
don't have anything else to do.
Well, you know, I mean, if you guys just like, well,
stand on the street.
Now. Like, I really came to like, just learn and observe.
With that old part.
Before it has to be.
Good job.
Very similar to our challenges. Yeah.